Hello and welcome back to Voicecraft. I rarely do introductions these days, but this one is special. Not only is it the 100th episode of the Voicecraft podcast, it's also indicative of what has made this project meaningful and unique over the years. This is a synthesis session hosted by a member of the Voicecraft network, Tom Lyons. Tom will introduce the session shortly, but let me just say you don't have to have listened to every Voicecraft podcast over the last few months to find deep value in the dialogue that follows. For those who have, you'll hear a conversation that draws together, wrestles with, and responds to much of the content and context explored in past episodes across questions of what it means for humanity to relate with technology, what it means to relate with our own sense of agency, what it means to relate with each other and culture at large. You can learn how to apply to the network at voicecraft.network and learn more about the project as a whole at voicecraft.io. If you're a regular listener to the podcast, you'll recognize the voices of Aspasia, Tyler, Kyle, and Journey, a polymathic mix of social philosophy, clinical psychology, spiritual practice, and deep engagement with the art of crafting voice in group dialogue. Here we go.
All right, yeah, so I guess we can drop in here. So the context of this session, the working title is a synthesis session. And so same with the reflective session last time, the idea is to go back into not just the content that we've been working through, but also the various contexts that have emerged in relationship to that content, and just spend some time kind of drawing out any threads that seem to be open or alive around the maybe the people that have been in these podcasts, but also their ideas. And I think there's actually a lot at stake in a lot of the ideas and philosophies and thinkers that have been through Voicecraft over the last few months. And so I'll spend a little bit of time maybe bringing a few things on the table, some core themes, and maybe drawing a little bit of a through line there. But ultimately, I think it would be cool if we can look for points of synthesis between the ideas and the people, and also maybe points where there seems to be incompatibilities. Because I think there is like a fairly coherent through line emerging in terms of the kinds of philosophies and the kinds of orientations that are needed to move into the future in a healthy and generative and sustainable way. But I also think the devil is in the details, and to be able to pass some of that out and really like go into the nuances, particularly at the level of like what's causing embodied contention around some of these ideas, could be really fruitful. So I think like in terms of core themes, relational philosophies or process relational philosophies in general really feel alive. And I felt like when Tim was talking to Indy Johar, he kind of brought forth some of Forrest's work, and he was really putting front and center these relationships of care. And then we know Bard is trying to philosophize relationship, and even like Dave Snowden's work in complexity, there's a real emphasis on like the local, the emergent, the relational. So emergence is definitely another big theme here. And to me, these like sort of like the relational, the embodied, the complexity approach, these all feel like these orientations that keep the mystery intact, more or less. And it seems like sort of maybe the secular, as we brought in with Sam Harris, and then like transhumanism, which feels like it's somewhat of an extension on the secular, are insufficient for creating the world that we maybe are starting to intuitively know could be possible. But at the same time, we don't want to shadow or rule out the secular or the transhuman, because there also seems to be important values in that as well. And then I guess to bring in your conversation, Tyler, with Les, there's also the sense, not just of like the dangers in the future, but there's also the way in which the past wants to hold on to its integrity and people who have done well through past iterations of structure and order are not going to give that up so easily as well. So I really felt like the flavor of the recent few months was like imagining the future. And I found the like hyperhumanism was quite a powerful synthesis of a lot of these flavors of like the human potential and kind of tapping into our innate capacities, but also not being afraid of technology. So yeah, maybe just to draw that into a final point, for me, there's something about like, what can relational philosophies do for us in our local environments so that we can come into right relationship with technology or something like that? So I'll kind of leave that hanging as a prompt, but feel free to go in a different direction or pick something else up. And I'll just open it to the silence now and we can see like what's alive for everyone here. Maybe I can add, do you all feel this coherent through line in these sort of thinkers and their ideas? And maybe like, how is that showing up for you in your body and in your life and in your choices?
Yeah, I'll jump in. I definitely feel I'm resonating with what you're saying in these through lines that you're picking up on. My mind was going to, I really liked in the transhumanism and the hyperhumanism session, Cadell's point around the distinction on how they're trying to deal with death or what role death plays, and an attempt to get rid of death, what that then means, I guess, what that means for what is life, what like the flip side of that, how does that change what we conceive of as life? And really the sort of pivotal role that knowing that we're going to die plays. But then I think about that, if we're thinking about themes, I also think about that in terms of just mini deaths along the way and opportunities to let go of things, which is required for this kind of momentum and movement and continuing to be open to shift and change and transformation, which is really how I'm approaching life, in part based on the conversations that we're having here. So that's quite messy. But I guess just to throw in another kind of theme that is related to the themes that you're describing, Tom, is around, because this links to the when you're talking about the past too, like an ability to be able to let go, an ability to be open to continuing to shift and change, how we relate to death, how we relate to loss, how we relate to letting go, I think matters, and I'm sure is relevant here.
Yeah, I really like that. Thanks, Aspasia. I was following along with the through lines that you'd mentioned, Tom, but I was not too sure where to pick up on. And I think this sense of a deeper continuity afforded in recognition of relationships between individuals is one of the critical gestures being made towards the future, that it can actually sustain itself in light of, I guess, the recent past's configurations with an emphasis towards individuality, where this is actually taking on something of a carcinogenic dynamic and the need to shift towards an embrace of death, as you were speaking to, Aspasia. Yeah, I guess this question of how that informs a deeper through line of life is the direction that I'd be most interested to go as well, now that you've said it.
Sorry, I hope I don't get interrupted anymore. Partly because what I overheard Aspasia mentioned a flow, momentum. It is important for the carrying forward of a feeling. It's important for carrying forward of sense of growth. And I think I would say, well, in the interest of acknowledging what you were saying, Tom, about the decline of the secular vision of the world and the control structures, perhaps at the very least, if not the whole of us here engaging in it, I'll begin with a prayer in my heart, an actual prayer, not as an acknowledgement of a propositional submission to the existence of a noun out there somewhere, but as a, and this is part of the prayer, I suppose, as a relationship that I'm engaging with between potential and actual. So what has happened, what really does exist, and what might exist. So whatever my relationship to that is, it seems to be something having to do with the masculine and the feminine, mother and father, brother and sister, lovers. There's synthesis is trying to figure out how to make, well, maybe Tim would say peers, but I'll say friends, of what really matters in these different threads. And I think it does matter that we do have something to add. I think part of what Snowden is acting as is a gluing force between human beings and corporations, which is necessary for corporations to exist, to keep functioning. But without the existence of additional threads, it's not sufficient. It will get lost in its own practicalities. And I think that's part of the tension between Snowden and Bateson, Nora. So whatever work we can do here in uniting these things, I think it, well, it will go a long way. So, and I think everyone here is very capable of contributing something significant. How far that propagates, does it even matter? Right, because it is about reorienting my own way, trying to improve my own understanding. Amen.
Amen. Lyle, I'm wondering where you go with that.
In terms of your original prompt around the relational philosophies and how those show up in the local in our lives. And then what Aspasia said around the momentum and death and undergoing that. And Tyler, like the prayer of the heart, like for me, an experiential level. This was a while ago, maybe 8 years ago. And I might have mentioned this in one of our previous conversations on Voicecraft, but I still remember this day very vividly. It was the day that I decided that what I valued the most was living a meaningful life. Okay, wasn't going to orient towards happiness. I was going to orient towards what was meaningful. And I was also going to gradually relinquish any pretense that I knew what that was. And it was more of this orientation, well, show me how I can live the most meaningful life. And now I can reflect back over the last 8 years and what emerged from that choice. And it was a very strong choice because I embodied it from that day onwards. And what emerged was a very, very, very relational centric way of being. That's what was shown to me, that my relationships in life and what those could become, the potential in them, and just how much was actually there. Like, I wouldn't trade it for anything. Not just like, I wouldn't trade one of them for anything. And I have many now that I wouldn't trade for anything. And to get to that point did require, as Aspasia said, it was this continual process of letting things go, letting go of limiting stories, letting go of things I thought should be projections. I was limiting reality with my projections. And I just kept peeling those back one at a time, one at a time. And what was left was kind of what Tyler said, like just this really strong prayer of the heart to be in experiential communion with reality itself. So I feel like these themes that we're talking about are some of the core themes of the last 8 years for me. So yeah, really appreciating this so far.
Yeah, nice. I'm noticing a curiosity around what happens to relationality in a secular psyche or in a transhumanist psyche. Like what's happening to that aspect? And maybe from a psychological lens or maybe from a spiritual or philosophical lens, but what is happening to that quality in the mind of someone who's devoted themselves to? Yeah, and in the case of transhumanism, it feels like they're devoting themselves to getting beyond the lack or the insufficiency of the human as we know it, or our biology, like something about like the pain of the body, the weight of the body. And in the secular, there's almost, we talked about this in the Sam Harris episode, but something around like some kind of trauma around the mythic or the religious, just like the way that more like maybe right hemispherical, but also more like ambiguous and continuous and ecstatic consciousness, the way it can be very animating, but it can also like tear things apart. And yeah, the secular is really trying to get a handle on that and put it in its place so that the chaos doesn't break into the world in ways that are considered unethical or immoral. But in doing so, it kind of has to cut itself off, has to sever its intimacy to some degree.
Well, the question comes up for me in reference to that, Tom. Of whether or not there is a faith in a deeper coherence, which could see itself through the warring of different visions with respect to what the sense of self is that's worth retaining. And there are different perspectives, visions on how to define that for practical purposes. I'm getting the sense that, and I think that this is generally shared in the context of voicecraft, there is a kind of fluid diffusion of the sense of self, not to the point of being absolutely relativized, but so that it can traverse its own multiplicity with more flexibility, more capacity to bend, and less... well, and so less likelihood of it just breaking altogether in the pursuit of its own continuity. Now, faith is not sufficient, and yet it feels like a fundamental first step that can still dilute itself without taking that to mean it. I don't mean that pejoratively. I think there's something also in the nature of delusion which is involved in the kind of momentum that we're experiencing. I don't know how to weave this explicitly into any of the ideas that have been spoken in recent podcasts, or actually, I guess one thread that comes to mind is the discernment of intentionally disrupting patterns which find their potentially teleological endpoint in chaos rather than a love of wise relationship or a wise care of loving relationship. That little semantic quip just helps me not collapse down on either side, keeping love and wisdom in some, in what feels to be some kind of necessary tension, tonos, just so that that musical note continues to play on.
Yeah, so that mythic trauma, it feels like the trauma of someone who fears being lied to, right? It's the pain of having felt like a fool, right? That something so large, like Santa Claus or the God in the sky, could have carried you and the people around you forward, and yet it's not true. And when you live in a world that's fundamentally constructed on determinism, on prediction, the greatest sin is deception, right? Of the inability to know something, because you can't predict, you can't build a machine, you can't be rational without good knowledge, good data. So that it makes sense that that's the great fear. I was in a stream a few weeks ago with someone who is a rationalist, and same thing, the question that is always in the back, but what if you're wrong? Well, I'm wrong all the time. What is that fear? And I think, so partly if you want to change the world, you're going to have to change our natural reactions to the ways that people are doing these things, right? It's because it's our traumatic reactions to things that help perpetuate things as much as those things themselves do. There's a feedback between those. And so there's in light of that, there's a conflation that I want us to keep track of. It's very easy to do, which has to do with the relationship between relationality itself in these broad scale phenomenon that we call religions or movements and the individuals that comprise them. Because you might say something like, what does a transhumanist believe? Or what does it do to a person to be a transhumanist? And on the one hand, I think that's a legitimate question. On the other, I think it's incredibly difficult to actually parse, because it's a feedback between these two things. No one person generates the whole of the sense of what you mean in transhuman or Christian or Islam or whatever. But you can meet any given individual and think that you understand more about the whole than you really do. You're undersampling, right? But you think that you have a good sense of it. And what seems persistent over time is something more like these basic sets of traits. We can roughly group them. You don't have to choose a particular personality metric that you like, but they all roughly correspond to persistent traits that human beings have, irrespective of their culture, irrespective of the movement that they feel like they belong to, and that they're much more closely associated with biological phases and developments in life, time periods, functions as parent or not, the act of seeking a mate or not. These forces seem to drive so much more of our behavior than the abstract kind of linguistic layer that we talk about when we say something like, you know, what are the Ten Commandments, right? So like there's a whole lot of difficulty when it comes to understanding how it is that we might discern what happens to a person when they believe in a certain movement. Frankly, I've always tried to get people to stop gesturing towards movements as much as possible deal with as much as possible the individual, the person in front of them. And that produces far more profound changes and possibilities. And in fact, the more that you reference the egregores that they belong to, the less you're dealing with a substance that has agency. And the more you're relying upon, well, the mythic layer, right? That you can't change at all. And just watch it happen.
Yeah, it's just occurring to me that like the complexity approach of more of the slight bottom up, choice by choice, emergent creativity is in a sense trying to disempower the egregore, because it kind of, as soon as the spirit starts rising up over the collective, it kind of collapses back down into a local discernment, which is great in the like coherence of a local environment. But it feels like there's also the lingering question of what does that then mean for the global aspect and the virtual as well, like in the way perhaps Bard's using that. What does it look like if you have that more like relational, person-centric way of relating on the ground? What then becomes of the structures that hang over us in that egregoric sense? Do they just get more less potent, or do they kind of transform into something that's more reflective of the self that Journey spoke to, the more transformative, fluid dynamic?
I think they're ending in a kaboom. That's what I think. They're very clearly having a death spasm. So yeah, it's a yes and, right? Like there's a all the forces and all the movements, all the egregores live their life cycles out. And here they are. So whatever remains after the battle, I think will probably be the meek, right? The ones who chose not to actually get into the heat of the effort to determine who's going to win. You know, it's going to be the mammal hiding in the cave when the meteor hits. No one saw it coming, right? Dinosaurs were the kings. Tyrannosaurus Rex is king. Just like the kings of our time, toppled in a very strange way by giving people agency. So that seems to be the thing that's most at stake, is our relationship to agency. Which of these, I think that's really what you were just saying, right? It's like, by participating with these things, do they increase or decrease our felt sense of agency? Right? And that's not to say are the constrictions placed on us. I tried to arrive here on time. It's a constriction, right? We have to arrive here on time in order to do this together. If you ever go to a country where time is not concerned, you know, it's like not part of their culture. It's so fascinating, right? It's like completely, it's just, maybe you show up, maybe someone shows up 6 hours later, maybe the next day. And everything, it's just, that's everybody's okay with it. The more we've orchestrated the whole of the world, the more we've all had to care so much more about time, and to the point that we actually shine a laser on a cesium-133 atom to measure its oscillatory vibrations so that we can measure time in the billions, right? This is crazy. But here we are. And yeah, what do you have to become in order to continue to interface with that thing? The intuitive part of me says, you have to become something else, but not in the good way that I have become accustomed to dying and becoming something else, right? In a way that seems to, well, when I look at the whole of the machine, I don't want to become it. I don't want to become like it, what I see it manifesting in the world. I could say it that way. So to couple with it, to become capable of living with it, seems like it has to be the other way around. Oh, yeah. Memory is always deeper than novelty. Way deeper. Right. Something like that. But you can't get rid of novelty.
I think it can be defensive, is what was coming to mind as you were talking. People orienting to a, oh God, how do I put this? So for me, I see the power and the point and the purpose of relationship still always has to include the individuality of the participants. I think that's really important. What I mean by that is, so the way I think about it is, if I do it right, like if I'm relating deeply with one person, a group of people, whatever, there's still a role in there for discovering more about myself and my individuality. There's something about that that's also about getting deeper connected into me, as opposed to trying to put something on a shelf and become. So I don't know how this is relating to what you just said, but that is vital to in my perspective on things. It's not to say that there aren't contexts in which you choose to do that for a particular reason, because we're all deluded, we're all traumatized. The human condition is essentially one of disconnection at birth, you know, from the body in which you've grown. There's a drive underneath always to try and reconnect. There's a knowledge always of our isolation and our disconnection, and a yearning to resolve that in some manner that drives us, which can never be resolved. This is true of everybody. I think this idea that like some people are traumatized and some people aren't traumatized, and you can be deluded and not deluded. We all are to varying degrees. What on earth am I trying to say? So even in this conversation here, as everyone's talking, I noticed inside me, because I'm also paying attention to myself as an individual, not just to this, I noticed all this grief coming up. There is so much grief inside me that it's potent. I started crying at one point, and I'm paying attention to that and seeing that as something important that has come about through this, but it's still something important about myself that I should take seriously, and I'm not just going to push to one side. I don't really know where I'm going. I struggle sometimes in these conversations with understanding how individuality is considered in all of this, is what I think I'm getting at, and trying to make sense in my own mind of the way that I see relationship that can still be in service of, when I truly, really deeply connect with another person and they're connected with me, I also get clarity on myself. I get clarity on the distinction of the two of us, something about this like merging of the relationship, but also me. And then sometimes when I enter these conversations, I get the sense that people that like, that's not, is that not the point? Or that there are ways of viewing this that actually it should always be about losing yourself, forgetting yourself, becoming part of some. Is that what we're talking about right now? That's where I get puzzled around different views on individuality, I guess, if we put it in basic terms. But I've said lots of things.
Yeah, no, that feels really relevant. There seems to be a tension when we start moving into the future or asking this question of what does it mean to be human? And there's always going to be that impulse towards like locating that identity at different scales and emphasizing different energies or polarities. And I, like in Bard, for example, he's quite strongly advocating for the sociant, which is the collective, as grounding the individual rather than the individual. But I think the fact that he makes space for the individual is like a great addition and makes it like slightly more of a gradient rather than an absolute, like, are we a collective or are we an individual, which is a helpful move. But there does, it seems to be like, even if you can kind of say that in language, actually acting that out in a space is extremely difficult, just like that, the power dynamics and the field dynamics, and not just from the like group to the individual, but also from the group and the individual up into the space where an egregore would sit, if we can think about that spatially, which maybe we don't. But it seems like even if we want to like get rid of the egregores, there's something that has to occupy that space. And I know like people have thrown around different language as to what that might be. Maybe it's just a collective intelligence, but there's something about like these fields being able to co-resonate with each other, and like what kind of like global alignment is being participated in a way that preserves the integrity of the field and the integrity of the individual, particularly the individual's choice. Because you don't, I don't imagine a future where you just go around in your local environment and you don't imagine the global, or you don't imagine like the shared future. And I think the degree to which our infrastructure is entangled is the degree to which we have to be able to relate to the whole. It seems like that the time where we could just concern ourselves with our local environment and the field is gone. So yeah, I'm curious about that. Like also, it feels like there are people who are wanting to step away from narrative as the way of filling that space. But if it's not narrative, then what is it that's going to bind us through time? And I feel like, Kyle, you might have some thoughts around that.
Wait a second. Wait. I just want to try to narrow on something for a second. Aspasia, I just heard you saying that you were confused around the nature of these conversations. Is that a fly? And that you were searching for more individuality or relationality at that layer. Does that mean right now, presently? Okay. Yeah. So when? That's because that's the thing that, like, when we're talking in these abstract layers, how do you, because it was interesting, you're like, and maybe you do this from time to time too, like, you're noticing you're saying something, but then you're questioning where it's going, right? Like, you said, where am I going with this? Do you ever, like, does that after the fact, like, are you self-reflective while we're all talking after the fact? Like, oh yeah, that's where I was going. Is it like something that persists with you, or is that just a momentary?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes. I'm really, I think, noticing in real time anxiety. I think that's really what that is. It's that disruptive process. It's me starting to talk about something, connect with what I'm trying to put into language, and then somewhere in the recesses becoming aware that there's all these people here, mm-hmm, looking at me, listening to me, and then becoming aware of the part of me that's what okay, so what am I trying, like, what, how is this coming, what am I trying to say? Like, it's that, and I know it's not always that. I know some of it's that, and then the point might come to me later. Sometimes it doesn't feel that way. It is a true wrestling with a sense that I can't find language to put to what I'm experiencing. Does that answer your question?
Yes, of course. I've got an app and a wearable device and a set of algorithms that if you follow, will fix you all of that immediately forever.
Only
for $9.99 subscription per week.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So this is the transhumanist, right? Like this is like the, how do we fix ourselves?
Yeah. And I have a very good therapeutic metapsychological model that I can make sense of what is happening for me, and I can even know some things I can do about it. And I don't know, some of it for me is about just accepting that that's happening and that is part of the human condition, without needing to pathologize it and see it as, oh, like that kind of, oh, I need to fix that and make that more. So what, like, I mean, I don't know, maybe that's just how I'm showing up and that's what's happening and I'm reporting on it in real time and that's just part of this, rather than overthinking it sometimes. I don't know. I'm trying to just tune more into my emotional state is really what I'm trying to do. And to me, that is where most of the gold is these days for me in my life. And this continues to go and I'm nattering away and sometimes that's not useful. But if I'm connected to something emotionally, that matters to me.
Yeah, I mean, surely.
But how you translate that then into relationship and, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you seem to be responding as though I was suggesting it seriously. It's just, you know, tongue-in-cheek making fun of how I perceive kind of the coldness and unseriousness of the.
But I think that there is probably a part of me that also responds to that seriously, even though I'd say 95% of me doesn't. That I could find myself at times thinking, oh, how are you supposed to fix all this? And I could actually.
Well, that's probably what is voicing, right? It's why you're voicing it out loud, right? You're presencing it so that you can kind of like keep it real.
Yeah. I want to hop in here because I was, as you named originally, Aspasia, I was experiencing a similar thing of this kind of self-recursive questioning of where am I at in relationship to this conversation, stepping out, stepping in, stepping out, stepping in. And it seemed to me that Tom responded well in pointing to the metacognitive bind of needing to hop across various scales of a sense of self from that sovereign individual state through to the collective, but not quite knowing where to situate oneself in a static position. And the fact of there not being a static position and any kind of myopic concern with the symptoms downstream of that mysterious place in that transhumanist vein is not in adequate address of the unknowing from which questions emerge in the first place. So just wanted to point out that I was very much enjoying that little exchange that all three of you guys have said so far. Now, yeah, if you want to jump in, Kyle, that's cool too.
I'll just say briefly before you jump in, Kyle, I think there's something quite exemplary in that, right? About what we're questioning into. It's like, what is human? And this ability to go from content to context and to kind of have that reflective moment and for it to mean something and to care about that and to be in like the turbulence of that. And it does, like, something I hear Tim calling for, and maybe this is more in the meta of the recent interactions or podcasts, is like really wanting to honor the second person. When you really go into the third person, often a lot of the communication can take this form of a kind of like, feels more omniscient, like the speaker, they seem to have like really understood what they're speaking to, and they can kind of deliver it in this very clear and illuminating way, which is really helpful. But there is something about that where if that's all you're ever exposed to, that you can kind of lose touch or begin to shadow your own difficulties in that process. And I feel like that's what Voicecraft's really wanting to do, is to make the second person and its kind of frailties, but also its great flexibilities, and its ability to transform the self, the kind of centerpiece of our spaces. And so we have that kind of freedom to dip in and out of, like, oh, we're doing the content, and now we're looking into the context, and now we're kind of seeing how those are relating. And that movement feels like it's really coming through this conversation. But yeah, Kyle, where does your mind go? Either in response to the initial question or just, yeah, what's arising now?
Where does his heart go?
Where does the heart go? So tying it in with what I said earlier about that choice I made 8 years ago of what to ask for and what to orient towards, that led me here. Very clearly led me to voicecraft, like in a very higher knowing. Like it wasn't, I sat down and looked through communities online and I was like, oh, which ones would I like to join? No, Ethan brought it on my radar and I just knew that I needed to join. I had never joined a community before. I had never really even posted anything online before in a forum or anything, maybe once to fix my Xbox a long time ago. And so it was a very not in my typical patterns up until that point to join an online community. And every time I've had a knowing and followed it, which is every time, 100% of the time, in hindsight, I'm like, oh, that was the right choice. Like, that was a good call. I have zero regrets about that. And no, this is like being here experientially for me is an experience of that. Like being here with all of you. Tom, I know we talked about this last week, but there's a way in which dialogue and being in the second person brings forth all of your being. And I definitely think meditation in the classical sense has a place for a lot of people, and there's a lot of benefits that come from that. But there's something about doing whatever we're doing that for me personally, experientially, feels the most aligning. It feels the most nourishing of all parts of myself, and it's very participatory. And so to tie that in with your original prompt, Tom, around the narrative or what's binding us, from my perspective, the nature of reality itself inherently, like at a very deep desire within, is to interact more in this type of way. Less of this kind of pre-scripted, pre-thought type of way, and something much more fluid, something that feels very free when you're expressing. And for me, that is one of the things that voicecraft has afforded, is a place where I can do that. And I'm doing it right now. I have no idea what I'm saying until it's coming out of my mouth. Like my attention is both in my body and on my heart, and it's towards all of you. And practicing that now for years and years in voicecraft feels like an ever deepening process that is one of the most meaningful things I could be doing.
So that like and subscribe.
just briefly acknowledging that feels like a description of what it's like to be inside a relational philosophy or in an emergent philosophy. Yeah, and there's something I want to bring in blockchain here. It's a slight tangent, but I'm going to tie it back in. It felt like what we're acknowledging in that discussion is that there's something about blockchain that seems to resonate with this approach or this way of being, at least indirectly. But because it's a tool, it kind of, it's sitting on the edge of like maybe various value systems. And right now, like a lot of it is falling into the abyss of the current structures and the egregores, but it seems like there's some kind of like latent seed where it could be spun up into a kind of infrastructure that could support this way of relating. And I'm not sure how, but maybe it ties in with the complexity approach. And there's something, yeah, something in that. Like, how do you go from what you're saying there, Kyle, of like this real-time kind of aligned, attuned presence into actual structures in the world, technologies that can actually like reinforce that and support that? Yeah, that feels like a big question. Like, what is that leap? Like, what are we imagining that leap looks like? And I know part of it is that we can't know until it's here, but yeah, I'm curious.
Well, back to memory and novelty. Blockchain being a trace on memory that is more trustworthy, where we have become less trusting of most of the record-keeping methods of history, given that the general critique is that history is written by the winners. And it's like, yes, of course, kind of, not really, but like on the level of egregore perhaps, which is also why it's doomed to collapse. Maybe, I'm not sure. Gotta always add those maybes, hey? Can't be speaking too clear. But also just to add a bit of contrast with your experience, Kyle, phenomenologically, of how you're engaging these conversations. I don't know that it's like, I don't think it's fully at odds, but it's interesting. I notice in myself, back to what you were referencing before, Aspasia, usually I have like a bunch of terms that are like bubbling away, which I want to like fixate on from what's been spoken so far. And I always have to like hold back, but I always want to like clamp down on this or that. And then it's, I guess this is probably not a contrast so much as it is, for me at least, an additional prior step that leads into that experience, because I don't know what I'm going to say right now, actually. But there seems to be something else happening beforehand. I'm speaking to this, I think, because the metacognitive bind, which was most relevant for me in what I was hearing you express, Aspasia, does continue to beg the question of how the future could be conceived, given what seems to be, and I'm recapping what I was saying before, but given what seems to be, like, just in the hard real of it, a war between, you know, various entities that extend beyond us, which we hope to give over agency to. Okay, maybe just to circle out on this one. One of the private sessions held earlier this week in the Freeform had everyone speaking about the praxis of ecology rather well, I thought. And I was like, okay, cool. So in that case, is this not an implicit, or now explicit, inquiry being made through the public expressions put forward on the podcast in terms of just synthesizing various worldviews which don't seem, you know what, I'm going to pull back on that because I am probably actually getting a bit muddled here, but that says something for itself.
Journey, would you be able to just sort of at least share where that was going to land, even if you're not fully convicted on its truth? Unless you've lost it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be that thing that'll pop up 3 hours from now.
I want to try to bring back in this object that we were sort of exploring before, because it feels like it's important. And I feel like I've noticed Tim also to some degree trying to draw this out of people. Yeah, something about like the greater forces that are shaping our identity. And like with Carl Hayden Smith's stories about his psychedelic experiences and sort of talking about entities and egregores, like what is the place for that in an environment like the ones, say, Dave Snowden is creating with the complexity approach, where you have people making choices on the ground based on their own values and their own consensus and coherence? Would we be speculating that they're being informed by these higher forms or beings? And would we be assuming that how that pathologizes is if one higher form predominates the group too intensely? Or like what, yeah, what's the kind of, because it, to come at it from another way, it's like people right now are organizing together. There are many groups of people coming together. They're engaging in practice. They're engaging in certain ways of relating that are somewhat old, but also being revamped by the new. But we know that these larger forces are also at play. And there's something about like how those forces come down into these groups and how the group relates to them. Like, do they get taken over by them, or does the group maintain its agency in the face of them? Like, how are you guys understanding that? For yourselves, even.
So let's go with Snowden real quick. The notion of the egregore of Snowden's work is the Kinefin framework. Let's just choose that portion of it. He comes into a company's setting, the landscape, and he says, "Behold, here is your framework. Here is your new landscape. Right, I'm going to change things, rearrange them a little bit. I'm not changing you at all. I'm just going to put you in a different structure and we're going to see what happens." Now, in a business setting, you have a very easy metric on the far end. Did the number go up? Right? So you always have a very reliable feedback. So whatever processes he's engaging in, if they're not functioning, that is, if the business is in decline over a certain period of time, his framework can't function, so it won't be adopted, right? It will be rejected. And then what he'll do is he'll go with agency and change it and then come back to see if it fits. And if it fits, then it sticks. And maybe he'll modify it as it goes on. But this feedback relationship is what determines over time a selection process that lands on something that functions. When you're talking about some of these other grand scale phenomenon, the question is what's the feedback process that's taking place? What is the actual metric, right, of that's associated with the notions of growth or proper functionality? And I would say that in the spirit of synthesis, what we're looking for is like the total experience of a human life being accounted for in a sense and afforded by the environment that you're within, right? And not just what we know it to be, but also leaving room for those things that we don't know it to be. But it has to, at the very least, begin to afford the first. And so when I'm looking out into the world, I'm looking for egregores that afford the most of the human experience, of the whole picture, the whole image. And I think that work hasn't been finalized. Like I think it hasn't actually been woven together in a way that we can point to something and say, you know, look here. Yeah, I think this was taking place. I mean, the reason why I'm at Voicecraft is certainly the same right? That looking for the functions that need to exist in the world that don't seem to have existed, seem to be necessary. And yeah, place to cultivate proper dialogue and transformational process of, you know, relating to each other in speech is certainly a big part of it. It's a huge part of it. Unless you want to fight.
Well, exactly, because it's so easily dismissed in most contexts on the basis of having naturalized argumentation as the default. And it's like, oh, okay, it's pretty hard not to submit to the pressure of that collective.
Well, the way I've been doing it is that you don't submit, you just go and fight with them, right? And beat them at their own game, kinda, not exactly, right? And then afterwards say, all right, now that we did that, can you try it my way? Right, or at least want to talk about my way? It's the way it's always worked, right? Like, you play my game, I'll play yours. Or the other way around. We have to take turns. And if you're willing to go with people to the place where they live, they, I think they're more inclined to visit your land. Problem is, how do you treat them when they get there?
Cam, are you still with us? Because if you are, feel free to chime in now and join us for the tail end.
I'm going to jump in quickly because my mind goes to, my mind always goes back to therapy. And this, you know, this sort of application of a new framework and changing the context and seeing what happens. And so from a therapy point of view, though, you have to have a willing, the other person has to be signed up to the task. Their will has to be online. It can't be compelling something. When it comes to larger groups of people, I guess I worry about, is everyone signing up for the same thing? Is everyone, and they don't have to be, but there's so much groundwork that goes on in therapy around, like, just trying to get very clear on what is happening here. You know, what is the goal? Checking that will is online. Lots, and you have to go through all these defensive layers. And really, honestly, the bulk of a lot of therapy is working through the defensive layers around all of that. And then it's all very simple. I'm just not entirely sure how that applies when it comes to groups, I guess is what I'm struggling with. And I think some of this goes back to actually something I was trying to say earlier around the individual. And the clearer and clearer I'm getting in my life around how nourishing and satisfying and interesting I find being able to generalize and talk about things in abstract ways. And yet it's always about the individual that you're with. And all those generalities and all that abstract stuff, so for example, in therapy, all the theory, all the different stuff, right? I've never had an individual in front of me that has perfectly captured any of it, is what I'm trying to say. There's a need to be able to discard those things and meet the individual while also some kind of orienting framework. And this oscillating back and forth thing is really important between those two, at least for me. And I think I worry sometimes, as much as I love discussions about sort of general themes, and to not lose the fact that it never really captures a person, or it's only ever saying so much, and really just always being open to the unique aspect of the individual, every individual. And every moment, even, like, even the idea that, you know, even the individual is always changing and reconfiguring. And how do you account for that, I guess? And I think maybe this is about when things become too abstract or groups become too big, and now there is no longer really a chance to ever be checking in with the individuals. I don't know. There's something about this that I am wrestling with currently, because I worry that it starts to err on the side of a defensive intellectualization and this idea that we might actually be able to come up with some framework. What on earth am I trying to say? That's a true question. I'm trying to say something and I really haven't got it yet.
I feel like I'm hearing you.
Okay.
And I, yeah, if you don't mind if I jump
in. Go, please. Yeah,
it's, one thing I'm hearing in it, which feels really important, is like, because the individual is not reducible, there's always going to be novelty there, and we have to honor that. And that's how someone becomes more than who they are. It seems like love performs that transformation as well. But there is this challenge of, so we want to kind of make each other more human by being in these relationships of intimacy and authenticity. But there's still, like, at a certain point, as you said, like, that doesn't get past a certain scale because you're no longer in the domain of relationships of care. And so you need something that can help with the shape of the world beyond that. And that's where I'm curious about blockchain, is because it feels like it's positioned to try to at least play some of that role. And then for me, there's a question here of, like, okay, so once you go beyond relationships of care and now you're in the domain of transactional power, can that larger scale domain be mediated by just a technology, or does it actually need a religion that is, like, encouraging that technology in a certain direction? Because I often look at blockchain and crypto and think, oh, wow, that space is really missing a religion. And it feels like they're just being sucked into worshiping the current values. And yeah, just like I said before, like, there does feel like structurally in it, it's almost like it has the vision of this, like, way of relating in it in some way, like the people who created, or the person, depending on what you're talking about, it seems like they were in touch with the spirit of what we're engaging with here to some degree. It was alive when they were creating it. And it feels like it's, like, our, in a sense, our responsibility to help it become that. And I'm wondering, like, will it become that through what Kyle described of, like, just everyone participating in that way of relating and what you were speaking to? Or will it need someone, I hate to put him in the seat because he'd love it, but someone like Alexander Bard to think through, like, the philosophy that accompanies that, to have this religion that can guide the creation of technology beyond the scale of relationships of care. That sort of feels like a real kernel here for me. And maybe Cam has something to say if you don't have anything to respond with, Aspasia, but yeah.
I think you've all really touched on something of essence here with, for instance, the word intimacy. And so much of what has been spoken to has been incredibly salient for me. And it's been quite nourishing just being able to be absorbed in your various energies and trains of thought and just feel into that flow. And that's what's so beautiful about these comings, types of comings together, right? It's just such a unique mode of interaction, and it nourishes some us quite deeply. And I think just to sort of really crystallize on some of that, again, that sense of intimacy, I think that is a deep yearning existentially, physically, all these different layers to that. And that's what I've really felt listening to you all. It just feels like it's offering something that is both dear as an individual appreciation and nourishing aspect to it, but it's also quite transpersonal. And again, that going between, I guess, as you've spoken to the context and the content, but also embodying that as an embodied kind of process. So Yeah, the number one theme that comes to mind for me is just the felt presence of intimacy and how that imbues our relational context with meaning. And I guess what Tyler said earlier, the full range of what it means to be human is coming in here. And so that's likely to lead to issues of complexity as the mind tries to, you know, observe and articulate that, which is hence this recursive stuff that's going on. And it's actually so fascinating to observe that and also vicariously relate to what that's like, just trying to keep an articulation going in the same direction whilst observing the flow of that and the place from which that is being motivated by this willing to be and to be present with one another. And so it's such an aesthetic thing to be present here, and even just as an observer in particular, it's unique experience for myself.
Yeah, well, for the sake of being in direct dialogue with the podcasts that have been released so far, and in response to what you've just appreciated, Cam, this, I would go back to a praxis of ecology insofar as the individual is individuated in the Bardian sense, so that if we don't know what we're saying in each moment because we're not settled within any given lexicon or movement, and we're trying to actually wrap around one another's reciprocally, the sense of self is diffused. It's very unsettling, but this seems to be the way of it as a self with a deep memory comes into contact with other selves that then either invites or necessitates, not sure, novel reconfigurations. So it is unsettling. And I guess I would turn back again to recent historical structures of control, having the hubris to think they can offset this to technology rather than hold to the sacred source which is present within each individual. Strong words. I wouldn't usually say that, but here we are. Okay, so there's this, and then there's, I want to pick back up on a question that you asked before, Tom, about how phenomenological contact with the far reaches of consciousness through things like DMT, as Carl Hayden Smith is advocating for, and the control structures which have already been established, is very destabilizing on the collective level. It's interesting because, again, this kind of like jumping between different scales where I feel like I could easily be wrapped up there. And that seems to be where the majority of people's attention is drawn to in our current information landscape, in the way that fish don't realize they're swimming in water. We don't realize that our landscape of communication is not actually conducive to being unsettled. It would favor settling into this or that movement. And I can't respond directly to any of the points that have been made in the podcasts so far, but I do feel like I'm responding in some way. Okay. So the fact of it being more inferred or peripheral rather than direct, that seems to be a qualitative shift in how I relate to the pursuit of knowledge over and above a quantitative accumulation, which would be the preference for the machine, so to speak.
Yeah, just briefly on that, it feels like one of the really tricky tensions is sort of knowing viscerally that we have to allow whatever's coming to emerge, but not letting that shadow the value of the imaginal or the virtual. Like we have to constantly contend with the possibilities whilst not getting sucked into them endlessly. And then potentially even crystallizing one that's way further in the future and then becoming subsumed by it as a kind of egregore and ideology. And that's tricky. Like it feels like in conversations, we're always trying to like find our center of gravity in relationship to those forces. Because if you get too sort of myopic in the here and now, you might miss some kind of frame break opportunity or some kind of like new way of seeing that may linger on the horizon or might linger in the high level synthesis, but vice versa. Like if you go too far into the clouds or into the dreamland, it's almost like there's too much possibility there to really have anything meaningful to come back with without some like radical return to the embodied experience.
Okay, just a quick response to that, because that was great. It's a confidence game, but the confidence is actually diluted, which is why I find myself frustrated in the possibility of these conversations occurring, where actually in that sense of just speaking the right terms, people revert to like all these platitudes. And it's like, yes, all these things are true, but now we actually have to pick them up and put them together. And that's just another layer of complication, which is going to induce all this anxiety.
Yeah, I think even the imagination can operates in different ways. So I mean, there is versions here that I'm hearing about that just sound like worry and rumination, which is anxiety provoking and perpetuates anxiety, versus there's also a way in which the imagination can be used, if we call it that. One can open up to our ability to imagine as actually, oh God, how do I say it? So for example, if you really get in touch with a feeling and you get out of your own kind of cognitive way and you really get connected into the sensation in your body, and the defensive work has been done, so the usual defensive structures are down, then you can see in your imagination exactly what that feeling wants to do, right? You can watch the action impulse play out in imagination rather than do it in real life. And I say that because there's a completely different quality to that. It's much more like bottom up, like it just happened. You're watching something unfold, right? That comes from that emotional place, as opposed to purposely entering into, I guess, imagination to try and play out a scenario. If I did this, what would happen? And then like using it more as a landscape that can then easily turn into something like worry, rumination. I think there's an important distinction there too. Our ability to be able to imagine can be used, can operate in service of us getting deeper clarity on an emotional state and then the ways that we might perpetuate our own suffering. But it can also operate as a way to distract and avoid us from our emotions and things that are actually going on more deeply inside us, and actually can just serve as a way to keep us distanced from our own emotional landscape. It can do both. I'm sure people are aware of that.
To one thing there, it's the distinction being perhaps prediction and anticipation that people have been talking about, where prediction is coming from the past in this controlling sense, anticipation is coming from the future in this strange teleological sense. I say strange because I'm so conditioned otherwise. but I'm definitely trying to like push out into that place.
Let me sit with that for a second, if anyone wants to jump in.
We'll start making our way to a soft close as well. So I'm curious, Kyle or Cam, if you have any final thoughts, or Tyler, and then Spasir, if you want to chime back in with that.
You asked the question, Tom, if how it is will relate to the spirit that moves in to fill the hardware of Bitcoin or the blockchain or whatever that represents. And it's certainly not an if, it's a when. And I would say it's not even a when, it's an already always. It's just the character of the thing that you're pointing to in your own mind. Is it distinct or not? Because, I mean, certainly when I interact with like a Bitcoin fan, there's a self-similarity to the experience now, right? There's a spirit. Certainly the language is very similar. The positivity is very similar. The spirit, I could almost copy paste the experience. And I have that with a lot of powerful movements, political movements, same experience, religious movements. It has a tendency to strip individuality. And I do feel like I'm engaging more with that than with the individual. But I always have taken William James' definition of religion, you know, from the origin of the term. It's a man's total reaction upon life. So whatever it is that we're doing in the world, it's because we're bound to it, either, you know, long-term or short-term, but we're bound to these patterns, these habits of being and relating. And the degree to which we're bound and the degree to which that boundedness is integrated with other bounds, and the degree to which they can articulate with each other non-destructively, this is what constitutes the nature of religion that carries the whole of a thing forward with health rather than disease, with pathology. It's not that you're free of problems, it's that it doesn't actually destroy life. And so whatever is currently in existence is the religion. It's presently in existence already, whether or not we give it a name or a certain set of boundaries. Of all of these ways in which each man and woman, I want to make sure I'm inclusive, and all the people that identify however they do, are bound to the actions that they're engaged in. And are those actions, are those things that they're attached to, fundamentally constituted of a set of patterns that's nourishing themselves as individuals and giving them opportunities to grow into moreness, or is it doing something otherwise? And I would say that most of the talk about what should be or what has been is not at all a good description. It's not a complete description, and it's certainly missing the participatory part. And so when Bard talks about the sociant, or when he talks about the days of yore, right? You know, let's all get back to Zoroastrianism. He's definitely doing it as a salesman. He doesn't tell you about the horrors. He doesn't tell you about the ignorance. He doesn't tell you about the holes and gaps that we human beings collectively together have overcome since that time, right? There isn't a clear description, even I think, that's possible to give for some of these ways of life. Certainly not the future ones that we can't even hope to actually know how to describe. But nevertheless, that's what people do, because they're selling the image, they're selling the idea, because they're hoping for it to arrive. And in my experience, almost always when the salesman sells me on the thing, when it arrives, it's never what they sold me. never. Okay, so this is like universal truth, at least in human. And I think it's in animal culture too, probably. I mean, the lantern fish lures in fish with its light. The various predatory plants lure in insects with a false smell of meat. Nature knows how to deceive. And when I look out in the world, in the human beings, at these grand scales, I'm also looking for this phenomenon, the phenomenon of deception in order to sell and then consume. And I am concerned that where you find arenas of rapid growth or the promise of rapid growth, it's usually deception, or such a narrow view that it's leaving out all the really nasty stuff, the side effects that you can't see. All right, and I'll land on this, curiously enough, right? The people that bought into Bitcoin and the blockchain initially were mostly the criminal enterprises because they finally could get away with it. But lo and behold, that was always a lie too, because the blockchain is a fully public observable thing. And with very good data analysis and timing and sniffing, you can find out everybody's wallets. And they have. And they've been monitoring them since the very beginning. And they know everybody everywhere all the time now. So there's no more anonymity. Like, you have to cash out at some point. If you want to get your money, that means you have to go to an exchange that's attached to a legal identity. And they know everything. So the FBI in the United States is having a field day right now prosecuting cases utilizing blockchain technology to track child pornography and drug sales, etc. Not so happy about the drug sales. Child pornography, great. But yeah, there's so much deception, even in our desire to rebel against so much of the overbearing deception that we already have present in the governments that control us now. And this tension between accepting of the majority rule and our desire to transform something which might allow us to maybe finally realize, the answer to the question asked Zia was asking before, how do you deal with groups truly? And I would say, if you know internal family systems, there's a bit of a hint, right? Because it's the same kind of process. But I mean, that's fundamentally what democracy is, right? It's the idea of like massaging a group of people to get a singular outcome, to transform them all into a univocal thing, right? Like a singular subjective being. And that right now is why we have such a schizophrenic United States, because nobody wants to be Biden, and half of them want to be Trump, but the other half abhor it. So, you know, you can't choose your heroes. All right, I'm done rambling. I really appreciate this conversation. It's been, it's always good. I've never had a bad one of these. You know that? Like, that's significant. That's significant. I mean, maybe there's been some, but never bad. So bravo, kudos, I don't know. It's not the egregore. It's each of you individually that's brought it.
Agreed.
Thanks.
Yeah, if anyone feels called to say anything else, say go for it. But otherwise, in the interest of keeping this in a watchable length,
just want to say briefly about the internal family systems reference. I think the key there is the psychodynamic aspect. And I think with IFS, it doesn't take the psychoanalytic into account enough. There's not enough emphasis on the unconscious part. I'll leave it at that. But I know what you mean, like that the parts inside oneself and the conflict and the I have a lot I could say on that.
The control structure.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't think IFS is sufficient.
Mm.
But the notion of coordinating a subset of selves, right, into a greater whole, right, getting them in coordination and some kind of harmony, but in dialogue first.
To some extent, yes. It's too big a conversation. Yeah, no, I appreciate the point.
Yeah, maybe this isn't like a full landing place, but I think we'll draw it to a soft close, then we can continue exploring whoever wants to, and then maybe we can include something in if it feels good. But yeah, thank you guys. It's been very interesting, and I feel like I got to draw on some things that have been eating away at me. So yeah, thank you.